You're listening to Radio Influence.
Oh, he got him
in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow. And here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC Fight Night 114 will take place on Saturday night in Mexico City. It will be headlined by a matchup of top 10 flyweight title contenders as Sergio Pettis looks for his seventh win in the UFC when he meets Ultimate Fighter 24 alum Bram Moreno. And Daniel Galvan and I are going to preview this fight card on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Now, before we start our preview of this fight card, I want to tell you about my sponsor, Fight TV. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Coming up this weekend on Fight, they will have ACB 66 Young Guns 20 on Saturday morning for free. Plus, they will have Canelo versus GGG on September 16th for $79.99. Download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Daniel, it is the first week of August, and this is the only weekend in August of a UFC fight card. I never thought I would say that the UFC would only have one event in a month, but it's actually happening.
That is absolutely astonishing. And you can see, if you look at this fight card, Jason, that they have stacked the deck for this one fight card, have they not?
I sense a little sarcasm in your voice there.
Yeah, man. This is a fight card that, firstly, I really do not understand how to process. What is it now? 3 weekends after this with no UFC? Is that how it's working out?
Let's see here. As I look at the calendar, 4 weeks. September 2nd is our next UFC card.
I have several addictions in my life. This is one of them. I don't know how I'm going to grapple with this at all. But this will certainly be challenging these next 3 weeks. At first, I will probably be like someone who experiences the outside world for the first time. And then I will feel like someone who experienced the outside world for the second, third, and fourth time. And that is, it's effing hot. I want to go back inside. I want my UFC back. So, yeah, this card, man, not very good at first glance. It's one of those cards that it is a lot like, you know, Jason, I may not have the science correct, but when you turn a light on and off, your eyes or your pupils will dilate or something like that. And that's what this card is. Like, at first, you can't really make out what makes this card good. But if you start digging deep, I think you can find about 5 fights here in Mexico City to get really excited about.
I think if the UFC would have done a better job marketing this card, I think it would have gotten the fan base more interested. I saw earlier this week a great point. I'm not going to act like I came up with this point on my own, but saw some people talking about this on social media of why didn't the UFC market this fight as Puerto Rico versus Mexico, even though Sergio Pettis talked about he's got some Mexican descent in him. But, you know, it's kind of, you think in combat sports, Puerto Rico versus Mexico is kind of a marketing ploy that gets used all the time. And to me, I think that's in marketing this fight, I think they would have marketed that way or market the fact of, hey, this is, you know, fresh contenders at 125. When we talk about the flyweight division, we're talking about how Demetrius Johnson has just cleaned out this division. But to me, I think if you would have used those two marketing ploys, I think at least you could have got a little more buzz in this fight. I mean, I think it's just, look, it's a fight night card. I don't feel there's a lot of optimism for this fight card. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like if the UFC would have done a better job of marketing this fight, that maybe people would be more interested.
Yeah, I do too. I think the general sentiment last Saturday was that there was a lot of momentum for the UFC. And it appears as though they have not necessarily capitalized on said momentum heading into the next week. I think the upside for this card as we speak today on Friday is not so much the event itself, because I would assume the viewership total will be very similar to what you get out of most Maso Menos Bland. And Maso Menos means kind of, sort of, type of FS1 cards, where there's a general plateau that they will get at no matter what they run on that time slot with the UFC label on it. So that's what you're going to get. So I think the upside for the UFC is more of the post-fight reaction of, is the main event, does it produce something that people are talking about and they can move the gear towards the winner gets a title shot? That could or could not happen based on who wins, based on how they win and how exciting the fight is. And obviously you have Cejudo versus Wilson Hayes later on in the calendar year. Looking at how they could have marketed it in terms of criticism or advice, yeah, you could have done the Mexico-Puerto Rico thing. There's obviously such a long history with so many great Puerto Rican versus Mexico boxing matches. I think when you think of Puerto Rico versus Mexico, that is the sport you single out in particular, with so many great Mexican fighters, so many great Puerto Ricans. But again, you also mentioned how Sergio also identifies somewhat with his Mexican lineage. So that would have been a troublesome one at the Pettis household. So I like the idea of simply Demetrius Johnson thinks he has eliminated every challenge at flyweight. But here are two young guns coming out of nowhere. They're going to put on a fight of the year contender. That's kind of how I would have marketed that fight. I don't know what the commercials would have looked like. Maybe it would have been Sergio Pettis and Brandon Moreno sitting at home watching Demetrius Johnson on TV and then training, something like that. I don't know. But that to me is what makes this fight so exciting, in that you have two fairly young 125-pounders who are incredibly exciting fighters inside the cage, who I think realistically could challenge for the title in their next or fight or the fight after that. So that to me is where the intrigue is, Jason. The quality of the fight as well as the quality of the fighters, even if the fans don't know who these fighters are quite yet.
You know, we talked about it last week. I think we did it on the pre-fight podcast. Maybe we did it on the post-fight podcast as well. We talked about how, you know, MMA is not like the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, where stats can really tell the story of a fight. But there are definitely stats you can look at that tell a side of a fight. Wins, losses. And here is a crazy stat, that Sergio Pettis, if he wins on Saturday night, it'll be his 7th UFC win. Of course, he made his debut November 16th, 2013, back at UFC 167. He has 6 wins. And if he gets a win, he will tie his brother for UFC victories. Anthony Pettis made his UFC debut in June of 2011, and he only has 7 wins in the UFC. You talk about just one of those crazy stats at this fight card. To me, that's got to be the craziest one.
That is absolutely insane that he will be able to do that. Because Anthony Pettis is literally like 30 years old compared to, how old is Sergio? Is he 12? He's 23. 23 years old to 30 years old. Imagine that Thanksgiving dinner. When you said that, I couldn't actually believe that. I had to check that real quick. But Sergio, like, he exploded into the consciousness of Anthony did with the kick. And as soon as he did the kick off the cage, he was a main event guy. So he always had that steam, that star power, and that attention. So while we've paid all that attention to him, because of some of the losses, he's faced tougher competition over time and the injury concerns, his brother has been able to catch up. And then I think it's safe to say, when it's all said and done, Sergio will likely have a more impressive UFC record than Anthony Pettis, just in terms of wins and losses. Obviously, when you win the lightweight championship, you got to win a championship in your own weight class. I'm not super sure that Sergio will be able to do that, but I'm also not going to count him out. He's 23 years old and he's already in this position. So that's a great little stat, man. And I do think, if you're asking who's the A side, not the favorite in this fight, I think the favorite should be Brandon Moreno slightly, but who's the A side fighter, it is certainly Sergio Pettis. I mean, this is the fighter that DJ asked for when the UFC asked him for an opponent, correct? When they asked him, who does he want next at 125?
Sergio was one of the names that came up. I mean, obviously he's right there. You know, he's been in the UFC for a long time. He's been on a nice little win streak here over his past couple of fights. He enters this fight with 3 wins and 5 in his last 6. The only loss came back at UFC 185 against Ryan Benoit. Of course, you know, people may remember he was actually supposed to take on Henry Cejudo back in May at UFC 211 before Henry Cejudo pulled out of that fight 2 days before the weigh-ins, which, you know, obviously a terrible feeling for Sergio Pettis, and he talked about that this week. But when you talk about Bran Moreno, I mean, the quick rise that Bran Moreno has had in the UFC, the guy comes in to the Ultimate Fighter 24 as the number 16 seed, and, I mean, you look at that season, he's now the highest-ranked guy. You know, to come out of that season just ahead of Tim Elliott, who's at the number 9 title challenger, Bran Moreno, number 7, and kind of he benefited from exiting that tournament in the opening round. And, of course, he's gone 3-0 in the UFC. He's also 23 years old. His wins in the UFC against Lewis Mocha, Ryan Benoit, and Dustin Ortiz. I think the Dustin Ortiz fight, I think, really probably got people kind of recognizing of how good Bran Moreno is, but it has been an amazing quick rise for Bran Moreno in the UFC.
I think it all started for him the second he lost in the Ultimate Fighter. Despite losing to the number one seed, his performance against Alexander Pantoja was phenomenal. This was something where these guys were seeded 1 through 16. This wasn't too really bad. Like, you know how you watch the Ultimate Fighter and you have one coach who did their homework and one who didn't, and when you have that draft, that's going to allow someone to fall down the cracks. That was not it. This was these guys were seeded as the top flyweights that they were expected to be, and Moreno went up against number one and looked great. And from that point forward, it's been a matter of passing test after test, and Dustin Ortiz was the biggest test. He fights on this card. This is a phenomenal fight. I think this is probably a better matchup for Sergio Pettis than the Cejudo fight, just because we all know what Henry will likely do against Sergio, whereas for Brandon Moreno, I think he is so confident in every aspect of his game, as he has every reason to be, that this fight's going to be dictated by where Sergio Pettis wants it to play out. So that's probably why it's a better matchup for Sergio, but Brandon Moreno is such a highly talented fighter that I do think he's the favorite in this one.
Yeah, he is the favorite as recording this podcast here on Friday morning. Bran Moreno minus 170. Sergio Pettis is at plus 150. Sergio Pettis did open up this as a very slight underdog, plus 110 in this matchup. But it is a big matchup in a 125-pound division. When you look at some of the tail of the tape, to use a line from Mike Goldberg, it is almost virtually identical, 5'7 versus 5'6. Bran Moreno will have a 1-inch reach advantage in this one. You know, when you start to look at, you know, strike slam per minute, 4.02 for Sergio Pettis, 3.25 for Brandon Moreno. Sergio Pettis does have 42% takedown accuracy. It's the same exact takedown accuracy that Bran Moreno has. Bran Moreno, does have that submission average of 2.3 submissions per 15 minutes of fighting, so he has a little bit of advantage there. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a big matchup. I do like Bran Moreno in this matchup. I have a feeling this goes all 25 minutes, as long as, and I guess this is the other part, this fight card you have to talk about is the high elevation of Mexico City. It was interesting to kind of hear some fighters say they went down early. Some fighters say they did not go down early. Angel Buen, one of those fighters who did not go down early, talked about what he did to kind of get ready for this one. But, you know, I have a feeling this goes all 25 minutes, but I think the asterisk to that would be is as long as both their cardios hold up.
Pretty smart by the UFC not to put a 205 or heavyweight bout on this card in Mexico City. I feel like they've learned their lesson over time. Yeah, man. Here's something interesting. Sergio Pettis has never finished a fight in the UFC. So do not bet money on that taking place. Obviously, I kind of reverse jinxed him, similar to the way we did with Tisha Torres. But if he does win via decision, it would be his 7th consecutive win via decision. That's one away from matching Tisha's streak to start her career. So I would anticipate a Brandon Moreno victory. It's not something that I feel very good about. And the more I kind of looked at how these guys fought, the more I fell in love with Sergio's stand-up, really, in particular. It just appeared to be more technically sound. But that may not shake up when it comes to who's actually going to win the points on the scorecard, because when you are a bit more aggressive, the judges may not pay said respect to your technique, and I think Brandon kind of fills that gap there with the aggression. He is incredibly a big time risk taker, and there have been a few times in his career where that has not paid off for him. So I think Brandon, whatever he gives up with kind of the technical approach, he will more than make up for with the aggression, the explosive nature of moving inside and outside quickly. When it comes to the grappling aspect, Sergio's pretty solid on the ground. I just think Moreno does a nicer job of when the fight hits the ground, attempting to get his opponent's back, even if he starts off on his back. I think Sergio has the better wrestling of the two. So even though Sergio is the underdog, I think there is some smart money to be played with him. With that being said, Brandon Moreno is my pick just because of the level of competition. I get a higher sense of confidence with his upside and his improvement fight to fight. So that's why I like Brandon Moreno here in this fight against Sergio Pettis in Mexico City.
Co-main event of this fight card, women's strawweight matchup, Ronda Marcos against Alexa Grasso. And are you like me and surprised how much of a underdog Ronda Marcos is?
I am, man, because I think we're thinking exactly the same thing, right? What are we thinking in this fight matchup, skill-wise?
I just think in terms of, I just like the skill set of Ronda Marcos being a veteran. I mean, you look at who she's been in the octagon with. I mean, you're talking about she's just coming off a split decision, win against a former champion. But, of course, what's going against Ronda Marcos is there is a trend on her record. And that trend is she can't win back-to-back fights. Since she started 3-0 in her career, it has been alternating wins and losses. Since then, I mean, obviously, you look at the losses, all notable names, you know, Justine Kish, Jessica Penne, Carolina Kolbakiewicz, and Courtney Casey, you know, the wins, Carlos Barza, Jocelyn Jones-Lyberger, and Ashlyn Daly in the UFC. But, and we talked about this on the post-fight show, I just would have thought they would have given Alexa Grasso more of a tune-up type fight, help kind of grow her a little bit instead of, they put her in there against one of the, you know, top 10 strawweights.
Yeah, man, because Alexa Grasso has a lot of potential, I think, especially in the Mexican market. I think the reason why Ronda Marcos sticks out as a fighter who is a tough matchup for Grasso is really simply put the wrestling. I just think she has that strong takedown base to eliminate so much of what Grasso does, and more importantly, just to steal rounds. I could foresee close rounds on the feet that are stolen late by Ronda Marcos shooting in with the wrestling takedown. And even though I see that and I think this is a tough challenge for a commodity at strawweight they should probably protect in Alexa Grasso, I still think Alexa will be able to win. When this fight sticks on the feet, Jason, I think that one of the many things that makes Alexa so marketable is that she's like really exciting to watch fight. She usually employs a high volume. She has been kind of the highlight of the night more times than not when she's been on her Invicta cards. And so I think through that, she will be able to score enough points and steal two rounds. But this is a tough matchup, not only for her, but for Ronda Marcos, man. The lineup she has faced every other fight has been tough, as you've mentioned. I mean, that is, to me, more the reason for her losses than her inability to be consistent. When you're fighting Justine Kish, Jessica Penne, Carolina Kovacevic, and then Courtney Casey, that's a tough matchup in between your regular diet. But that was a quality win she picked up over Carla Esparza. I feel bad about this pick because I do think I could feel real stupid come fight time when Ronda out-wrestles Grasso throughout the fight. But I still really like what Grasso brings in between the aspects of the sport, independent of the wrestling.
Yeah, and once again, it's a notable fight in a lower weight class here at 115 pounds. And one of the things that Ronda said this week was that, you know, she enjoys kind of being that villain. You know, she's been in this role several times throughout her career. But I'm going to go with Ronda Marcos there in the co-main event. I think the sexy fight of the night pick is going to be our next matchup, and Aljo Buin and Nico Price. I think this has kind of got that makings of a, you know, quote-unquote war. Aljo Buin did say that, you know, during this fight camp, he's been balancing, you know, how to be an aggressive fighter, but also being a very smart fighter, putting yourself in the right place. And as I mentioned, he only came to Mexico City during fight week. You know, he did go up the Big Bear. He said he did sleep in a, you know, high elevation, you know, tent that he bought, where Nico Price went out there 3 weeks in advance to get ready for this. So we're going to see maybe if that does play into this or not. What's your thoughts on this fight?
Man, yeah, this ain't not a sneaky fight of the night, man. This is forefront and center. I'm looking forward to this one. I hope Alan Jobelain is not fighting smart, because if he is, then this may not be exciting. But if he is not, then this will be great. Nico Price, thus far in his UFC run, has been a fun striker to watch, and so has Alan Jobelain. So I think Alan's going to run into some trouble, man, if he attempts to outstrike Nico. It's closer than I just made it seem, but I still think Price probably has the better hands of the two, and I think Alan can sneak this one out, utilizing takedowns and not engaging in a brawl-type bout. But honestly, when he makes the walkout in the arena in Mexico, I think Alan's going to want to trade, throw some bungalows, and attempt to steal the win. So thus far in each of their careers, obviously Alan Jobelain has competed against a higher level of competition. He's had more success. He's been a guy who at times has been mistaken as a male model. But I think this is a rough matchup, because I think he will get sucked into the stand-up affair. And in that, I think Nico Price will get the win here.
I do want to, after we talk about this fight, I do want to go back to some questions we got related to the main event. And I honestly totally forgot to get to them. Had them saved in my likes on my Twitter account, but we'll get
okay,
back to
Jason. Okay, Jason. Well, way well, to be loyal to the to our listeners.
Hey, I'm just being honest. You know, I totally forgot about him. Just being honest about it. You know, you look at Alan Jobelain, you mentioned about he has faced, you know, the tougher competition. I mean, you look at the names he has fought during his time in the UFC, just some notable names. You know, Gunnar Nelson, obviously that was his last fight back in March, got submitted there. You know, Mike Perry, Bilal Muhammad, Albert Tumanoff, Warley Alves, some of the notable names that are on his record. But, you know, Nico Price is only his third fight in the UFC, made his UFC debut at the end of last year. This is his first fight since February of this year, when he originally got a knockout win over Alex Moreno. However, that fight was overturned when he tested positive for marijuana. I think that, you know, this is, you know, has fight of the night written all over it, just because I think that stylistically the type of fight these guys are going to bring. I'm going to take Alan Jobelain. I think that, you know, he just basically is a smarter fighter, doesn't get into the brawl, more technical, works his way to a 3-round decision.
Yeah, man. So I believe this was our first disagreement, right?
Well, you're taking Grasso, right?
Yeah. Wait, you took Marcos?
Yeah, yeah.
I did not pick up on that wrong pick. Okay, so you got two straight wrong picks. I apologize. We really need to remember who we do, because I feel like you've been kicking my ass in these fight picks.
The way I have the bout sheet in front of me, so basically I put my picks in one color, and if you disagree, I put your pick in another color.
Have you been kicking my ass lately?
I don't think it's, you know, I wouldn't say kicking my ass. I didn't have a great week last week. I think I was like 7-5 or 7-4, whatever it was.
I was bad too. Yeah. Last week was bad. All right. Not starting on this one, because I am still, I'm still a young man. I'm still only 21, but we should really keep track and put something like buffalo wings on the table. And I don't know how we would pay each other, but maybe it's just I get to eat buffalo wings while we record.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
I think it's a great idea.
You're going to get like all sauce all over your microphone and your headphones. I mean, is that a good idea?
Absolutely not. But yeah, I had a near panic attack the other day because one of my friends tried to set me up on a blind date at a Buffalo Wild Wings. And I was just like, that is not my time to date.
You'd have to go like with a mild sauce, so you know that not to scare the poor girl.
Yeah. Even then, man, I'm a messy eater in so many different ways. I have not grown up since the baby phase. You know how you use a bib on the child? I still require one.
Have you gone to Buffalo Wild Wings this week? Have you gotten some wings in yet?
I think I'm going to go today. So looking forward to that. And then I think I might go to a Chili's. What's your favorite thing to get at Chili's, man? You look like a Chili's guy, you know, when I see you.
No.
You don't like Chili's?
My nephew likes going there. So, you know, that's like his restaurant of choice. And I couldn't tell you what's on the menu. I mean, I guess when I think Chili's, I think of, you know, them coming out with the fajitas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not exactly my.
I thought you were an NFL guy. Like, an NFL guy likes going to Chili's. He goes to a different city and it's like, let's go to Chili's. You know, let's go to.
I always like to do research on cities and try to find like the, you know, the local businesses. You know, not necessarily the chain restaurants. Find those local businesses. Like I head to Cincinnati here on Thursday of next week, so I was researching, you know, various places in Cincinnati. You try to find, you know, what's the good local foods. I mean, like when I'm in New Orleans, I always go to Drago's. You know, if I go to Kansas City, you got to find the local barbecue place. When I was in was it St. Louis last year? No, wait a minute, yeah. Last year, maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
I think it was in Kansas City, a barbecue place that, you walked in, I mean, it was in the middle of nowhere, but it was unbelievable food. You know, you always, you know, when you travel, you try to find those, you know, those local spots that have good food. That's to me, I mean, that's like when I watch Food Network with all those shows that, you know, go around the country, like the Diners, Dive-Ins, Dives, and things like that. I like just take mental notes if I know I'm going to that city, like, if that's, you know, a reasonable Uber drive from the hotel, I'm going there.
I want to go to the same place that Guy Fieri sat down, and I want to dig in. Yeah, I agree with you. If I was living your life, Jason, I would 100% be like that. But I also feel like you are someone that prepares for everything in life more than I do.
I'm very like I have to stick to I have routines. I have schedules. Like I just kind of plan my, you know, like every day I plan my day out, you know, basically.
Jesus, that sounds horrifying.
Well, Jason, that's what happens when you get older, Daniel. See, this is what you have to look forward to.
No, this is what happens when you get older and are successful. I'm getting older, man. I'm heading towards, you know, a rough spot here. You know, it's 9:30, and my plan thus far is like, when am I going to nap next?
Now look, I'm an early riser. I am up usually sometimes between 5:30 and 6. I will tell you that I do like the afternoon power nap. Give me about a good 30-minute power nap. All right, let's go.
Yeah, I love that. It usually turns into a 3-hour nap, but I do sometimes when I'm lucky, I'll be able to wake up after 30 minutes and it will feel great.
Yeah, but you just love, you know, but like to me, like I'm more like when I go out to eat, it's about like, I mean, honestly, my favorite restaurant here in Tampa is a local restaurant. They have two locations. I love going there, but I don't eat out a lot just because it's just so much, and plus my wife's a good cook, so that kind of helps. But it's just, at the end of the day, it's so much cheaper to eat at home. And this is coming from a guy who does marketing for a bar. I mean, so it's just the honest truth. I think everyone knows about it. And I mean, look, I think it's kind of the way we are as a society today, that a lot of people are choosing to eat at home as opposed to, you know, I think, you know, when I was growing up and, you know, I would bet that me and my parents and my brother would probably at least go out to dinner one time, maybe two times a week.
Damn. That is something that I think people don't think they do, but that's kind of the habit that we all have, other than those that like they just don't have the time and you got to get fast food. But that doesn't really count.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like, you know, to me, it's like I try to avoid fast food, but sometimes it's so convenient.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, especially on the way home. You know what it is? It's probably something where here's a philosophy take. I think people are more concerned with the idea of time than they ever have been in their lives. Like, they are like, in this 24-hour day, I must maximize it. Because I could spend 4 hours binge watching Netflix And if I'm spending two of those hours out and about at a restaurant, that's just a negative.
Sometimes I feel bad when I realize I've been sitting there for 4 hours watching Netflix. I just feel bad about myself.
Yeah, well, I always do, but it's like whenever the Netflix TV screen literally communicates with you, and it's like, are you still watching? That's when you know.
Hey, look, don't worry. I got excited yesterday when I got the email about season 3 of Narcos starts on September 1st.
Yeah, I don't need to watch season 3 of Narcos. I live in Hidalgo, so.
Which I'm like, okay, you know, it's for anyone who has seen that, I think they kind of understand this, like, the way they did that show during the first two seasons just made no sense to me.
Why?
Well, the first season is up to 6 months before his death.
Okay.
Season two was the 6 months before he dies. The season one was the rest of his life. So it's like, I feel like they could have dragged it on a little longer than they did.
Well, they're probably going to do it on a different narco or a different drug lord. Right.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I mean, you know, it's a good show. I like those kind of shows.
Yeah, I do too. Even though I'm not
big on reading subtitles, like my wife loves putting captioning on TV, and that just infuriates me.
Yeah, it takes.
I don't know why it does. I don't know if it's just because it takes up part of the TV screen or something, but it's just like I'm not a fan of that.
You're also a sports fan, so you should be used to that lower portion of the TV screen.
The lower third, yeah.
Yeah, being taken away. Like, that's just a commonplace, both with the scores or just the title of somebody. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's I've never really seen Narcos, but I may check it out. But maybe it will ring too close to home for me. I don't know.
I haven't watched any Netflix this week. I've got, I guess here's a question I'd probably want to know from our listeners is how many people are watching this fight card live as opposed to DVR?
Yeah. And if you're not watching it live, what are you doing? Are you going outside? Are you watching football? I guess there's no football this weekend, right? It was just on Thursday.
This was just the Hall of Fame. You have Saturday night. You do have the Hall of Fame inductions, but everyone else plays next week. For me, the Buccaneers, we play on Friday night in Cincinnati. So pretty much everyone plays either Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. I think maybe there's one Sunday game next week.
Yeah. Are you watching baseball? Like, what is there to do on Saturday? But
I think the question more is, are you sitting at home on Saturday night, or are you going out on Saturday night? I think that's probably the question. I think actually me and my wife are going out with some friends on Saturday night. My buddy asked me about it last week. He's like, you know, my brother's coming to town. We're going to take him to Ybor City, which is an entertainment district here in Tampa. He's like, yeah, we're going to sing karaoke. And I looked at him and I go, dude, there is not enough alcohol you can put in my body that would even get me remotely interested in going singing karaoke. Now, I will certainly film some people taking karaoke.
I am 100% with you. Karaoke is the most horrifying thing I've ever heard of.
Because let's be honest about it, you know, what, 70% of the people that go up there shouldn't be up there? And actually, probably 70% of those people are up there because they're a little under the influence of a cocktail.
It reminds you of a tough Latin America season.
I was thinking about that with this card. It's just so weird to me. You're going to Mexico City, no Gaslam, no Yair Rodriguez.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of got a question about that, right? Like, about the lack of star power, or was this the worst main event in a big city or something like that?
Yeah, the question that we got was from Troy asking, is this the weakest main event for a UFC in a major market? Now, I guess the question's got to be is you have to consider Mexico City a major market for the UFC, especially in terms of their expansion plans, internationally. Man, it's hard. Man, it's got to be up there. I just think in terms of it, this fight just isn't getting people excited.
So a couple things I wanted to bring up here. First, before answering the question, just something about So this is taking place in Arena Ciudad in Mexico, in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. This is undoubtedly going to be the weakest card they've ever run there. They've done three so far, two pay-per-views with heavyweight title fights, I believe, and then they did a fight night with Dos Anjos and Ferguson. The difference was like 20,000 for the pay-per-views and then 10,000 for that fight night. So I would anticipate a similar number. Now, in that same arena, later this month, there's a big Lucha Libre show called Triple Mania. It's their 25th one. And that gate and that ticket sales may, in fact, hurt the attendance for this one. So I would look – Bobby Lashley's actually on that wrestling card. But it's a big one. It's like a mask versus mask. It's like the WrestleMania for that one Lucha Libre promotion. So that is something to look at where that could affect the gate. In terms of how this stacks up, okay, so is Rio de Janeiro a major market?
See, I'd almost group Brazil as one market. I mean, obviously it's a huge country. Well, but just because they go to so many places, I.
Well, I would bring up Damian Maia versus Ryan LaFleur.
That was a bad fight.
And then in Dublin. Now, this one wasn't the scheduled main event. It was supposed to be Poirier versus Duffy. But you will not top in Dublin Paddy Holohan versus Luis Smolka. I mean, that was worse, for sure. Yeah. But it wasn't their build main event. So I'll give them that. And the last one, I don't know if Cincinnati, Ohio is a major market or not. They have the
Bengals. I would
say no. No. So Brown versus Silva, but Eric Silva. And then in Hidalgo, Texas, you also – and I'm kidding. So I would probably go with Holohan, Smolka, or the Maia LaFleur fight. But it's pretty close just because a lot of times when you have quote-unquote bad main events, one of the two fighters tends to still be a star name fighter. And I would even subscribe to you that Rashad Evans would still fill that void of star name fighters. Just you will be shocked, I think, if you are a casual fan when you see him fight on this fight card, because they have not made that known at all.
Yeah, it's crazy. Before we get into Rashad, another question we got from JG says, Pettis is real young but very experienced, especially in the UFC. Is it beneficial long-term for him and young fighters in general to have many fights already? And obviously you can relate this past, but you can relate this in MMA in general. I mean, I think that when you talk to managers, there's different philosophies out there. I think there's managers that have a philosophy of, a slow build with their fighters, get them in fights that, it gets some, cage experience in there. And then there's some managers that are like, I want my guys to fight the toughest competition in the world. And it almost seems like there is a rush to get that fire to the UFC, which I never think you should, because I've always said you never want to be developing in the UFC. You want to be a developed fighter when you get there. But I think for a guy like Sergio Pettis, I think part of the reason he got ultimately rushed to the UFC is just because of what his last name is.
Yeah, I mean, he did debut in 2011, but it was only 2 years later or two and a half years later when he did get that UFC opportunity. They did really develop in the UFC. A lot of his matchups early on weren't – I mean, he fought Matt Hobart, Yatsen Metsa, Caceres, which is a tough one, and Will Campuzano. So it's almost like they did, and now they've gone – pedal to the metal. The last name did get him a shot in the UFC, but here we have him and a guy with the same age whose last name is not Pettis, both in similar positions, and I don't think it has hurt them. I mean, the best case scenario for this type of career has to be the guy who's the featherweight champion right now, Max Holloway. He obviously got a lot very young, and he has had so much success, so honestly, looking at mixed martial arts, my general theory, Jason, is you want to be really patient early so a fighter can build realistic confidence. You don't want to push him too quickly where he has artificial confidence. Like, you don't want to do the Aaron Pico thing. But once the guy gets realistic confidence in himself inside the cage, I say go at it 100 miles per hour. Because when it comes to mixed martial arts, it's not so much how old you are as it is how long you've been fighting. When Anthony Pettis becomes a 30-year-old, he will have been competing in mixed martial arts for a very, very long time, and it's not unlikely that he will be towards the end of his career. So for all intents and purposes, you could be looking at a fighter who peaks at age 25. So I would say get it while your talent is there, Even though he's 23 years old, he's been competing since 2011. So I don't think it's too much too soon.
Well, and the other part of the reason why guys get rushed to the UFC is the financial aspect of it. You know, you look at what the pay is on the regional scene, and you know, do you really want to take essentially a UFC type fight at regional pay? And this is where, I mean, you look at the Contender Series. The fact that guys are making $5,000 a show, $5,000 a win, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, because I think that show's not going to stop, even though right now their last scheduled date is August 29th. I think it's going to have an effect there on the regional scene. And personally, I like the Contender Series. I think the Snoop cast is absolutely hilarious. You know, as long as there's not a Team Alpha Male fighter, then you really can't listen to the Snoop cast because it's just so one-sided.
They should tell Snoop Dogg to be antagonistic to Uriah when there's a team.
Is it bad that I want to see Snoop and Joe Rogan call those fights together?
You don't want to?
I do.
Oh, yeah, you do. But you're more than likely going to get in some I mean, I would assume they're going to do the – I mean, yeah, that would be the greatest thing ever. I think you could get into some issues in terms of, like, drug tests post and pre-fight. But, oh, my God, that would be great. I mean, to me, Joe Rogan is, like – he is such an amazing personality. It's crazy how hard that guy works with all his media empire. Like, can you imagine any other commentator in sports to have built the thing that he's built with the Joe Rogan Experience?
It's amazing.
And he's a stand-up comic, and he did Fear Factor. The guy's great. And then he does a bunch of drugs too. So it's like an amazing dude all in all.
It's amazing what he's built with his podcast. As someone who's is in the podcast business, it's absolutely amazing what he has been able to do there. Oh, we mentioned about Rashad Evans. I don't know what to make of Rashad Evans at this point in his career. He's taking on Sam Alvey, which a little story on Sam Alvey. He knew this week that he's going to be adopting a child. It'll be him and his wife's fourth child. And so he mentioned about that this week. And for Rashad Evans, I mean, I don't know if Rashad has anything left to prove in his career, but it's one of those things where you do wonder at this point in his career, you know, the fact that he's lost three in a row, if he loses on Saturday night, where does he go from here?
I honestly don't know, man. Because this is pretty rough for Rashad Evans, the former light heavyweight champion. If he loses to Alvey, who is a good fighter, obviously, with his hands, you're talking about four consecutive losses. You're talking about six losses with two wins in his last eight fights, and his wins are over Sonnen and Henderson. If you look at the fighters that Rashad Evans has beaten, very few of them are still competing in sport today.
About this? That are still in the UFC, it's one.
Yeah, it's Bisping. That's it, right?
Yeah, Michael Bisping. Yeah. That was November 17th, 2007.
God, it's hard to pick a Rashad in this fight, is it not? But I still feel like I'm going to. He's plus 115 here against Alvey. I mean, nothing would shock me. Like, he could look like absolute badness, and that wouldn't be surprising. Or he could just get a boring victory, or he could get a quick knockout. Like, literally everything's on the table in this fight. I feel stupid, but I'm still kind of riding with Rashad Evans in this bout.
I mean, at the end of the day, he hasn't won a fight since the end of 2013.
Oh, I think he knows that. I think he knows that. I think he's motivated as hell. I would assume he's motivated as hell. Why does he continue to fight?
I just think that he frustrates Sam Alvey, gets Alvey to make a mistake, and he wins by TKO.
That's a good pick. I could see that happening. I mean, to me, what concerns me for Rashad is a very quick loss to Alvey. Alvey jumping in from the get-go, putting him away and getting a finish. I think if Rashad fights it smart, that doesn't allow that to happen, he wins a unanimous decision over Alvey.
I mean, it's crazy. Sam Alvey is a favorite in this one.
It is to an extent, but it is also one of those where it's like, you gotta, what are you going to put money on? A fighter who has won in the year 2017 or a guy who hasn't won in a very, very long time? I mean, it's just mixed martial arts is not a sport that you get better at once you let go of the ring, right? You become 37 years old, you have bad performance after bad performance. Very rarely does a fighter return to form. And then the loss to Dan Kelly looks kind of even worse, having seen Dan Kelly's performance following that against Derek Brunson. So I understand it, but I'm still going to go with Rashad, which is, you know, I hope he wins, just because there's something really sad about these guys who are likely UFC Hall of Famers. I would assume Rashad's a UFC Hall of Famer.
Yeah. You would have to put him in there,
especially with like the UFC broadcasting bump. So yeah, I think Rashad wins, but don't put money on this fight. That would be a bad idea.
Is it just me, or have we not seen Rashad on FS1 in a long time?
You're right. I kind of hesitated when I said broadcast bump.
Because I was sitting down looking at this card, it was one of the things I came up with. I was like, man, when is the last time Rashad? And I can't remember the last time he worked for FS1. And maybe that's just because he's trying to work, you know, he's just really concentrating on his fighting career and knowing, you know, hey, he's lost three in a row.
Maybe he hates Michael Bisping. Maybe he hates Dom Cruz. Maybe Daniel Cormier hazed him. I don't know. That's a good question. I wonder when was the last time he actually was on there. I mean, it's not like me and you watch FS1 religiously, so maybe he's been doing some hardcore like UFC top 10 shows, but maybe you're right. Maybe he's kind of put it on the side as he's prepared for this return to form against Sam Alvey. I don't know. I hope he's really good.
Yeah, speaking of FS, he's a great analysis. Speaking of FS1, besides UFC, what draws you to FS1?
College football is about to, but yeah. The baseball games. I mean, it's all live sporting events. I don't care about the one person I really like on FS1, they haven't put her on air in a long time, is Katie Nolan. She's really good. Her show, Garbage Time, is good. It goes viral sometimes. They have a guy named Nick Wright who's okay, but he does the controversy debate crap with Chris Carter.
Yeah, and that show starts in another month?
Oh, it hasn't even started yet?
Yeah, but they've been promoting the hell out of it.
Yeah, you know it's going to be garbage. Not because they are garbage, but because that whole concept is outdated, right? That debate concept.
Yeah, the problem with that debate concept is it's whether we're talking ESPN, FS1, this is how those shows are essentially formatted. Hey, so you're going to go one side, that means I got to go the other side.
Let's go that way with let's do this with Martin Bravo, Humberto Bandini. Jason, who do you got?
How many people remember the last time Martin Bravo fought in the UFC?
Everybody remembers the last time, Jason.
You sure about that?
I'm sure about that. My grandma, LeBron James, he's a champ. He's got 6 rings. He was on The Ultimate Fighter Latin America. Everyone remembers.
It was only 10 months ago.
10 months ago. That's 10/12 of a year.
But Humberto steps up here on short notice to take this fight. Of course, it was initially supposed to be Chris Gutzmacher stepping up, UFC debut. One of the things that you'll see some canceled fights that he does have there. That's why Tapology has become probably my favorite website to go to in researching fighters, because I love the fact when they put the canceled fights out there. He's coming off a win back in May, an armbar submission in the first round. Tough one to call. I've talked to some people who have basically said that are really high on Humberto. So based on some people I've talked to, I'm going to go with Humberto here to win his UFC debut.
I don't even have to actually disagree with you. I like Martin Bravo. I mean, I don't have to fake do it. I think Martin Bravo is going to win this fight, but it's not like this is one where either of us feel strongly, I would assume, due to the lack of information I have on Humberto. I probably would have picked Chris Gutzmacher had it originally laid out to be Bravo versus Gutzmacher. We shall see what takes place here. This is kind of a showcase bout for them and a lot of other fighters, where I think the identity and the perception of the winner here will be incredibly crafted here. There's another fight on the Fight Pass I'm really looking forward to. But I'm not super excited about this one, but, you know, Bravo's undefeated, potentially has some promise, but maybe Humberto spoils that. Yeah, I do like Tapology. I was looking at it's cool how they have every fighter mixed up by nationality. Like, I was looking up Puerto Rican mixed martial artists, and I was kind of shocked to see how few there were. A lot, like, when you go to Puerto Rico MMA, you have to pick, like, Sergio Pettis or Dennis Bermudez, like, these fighters who have Puerto Rican descent. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was Jorge Rivera, who was born in Puerto Rico, but he's since retired. So, yeah, Tapology, shout out to them. Also, shout out to Flow Combat. Did you see their prospect rankings?
I did see the heavyweight rankings on there. I know as recording today is they're releasing a light heavyweight. I haven't seen the light heavyweight ones yet, but no, you love that type of stuff. You know, I think for someone like myself who does pay attention to the regional scene, but you know, great stuff there from Flow Combat.
Yeah, man, and I think that's like, you know, if you're going to watch something on Fight or you're going to watch something on Tuesday Night Contender, that helps out a lot. And it will be very interesting to see kind of how many of those guys make the jump to the UFC that quickly, because I do think what you have seen when you compare and contrast prospect rankings from 2011 to 2017 is the win-loss record. There's less fight experience for prospects than there was 6 years ago. It feels like prospects had more time to fight outside of the UFC, and it's likely, obviously, due to the amount of fight cards they have, but I do think prospects are making that jump quicker than ever.
Yeah, it's very interesting just looking at the light heavyweight rankings that they put out today. Number one, they had Slamino Rama, of course, the former WSOF heavyweight champions, moved down to 205 pounds. The other fight on this main card, Alejandro Perez versus Andre Sukumthaw. Of course, it's been a while since we have seen Perez. Of course, it's coming off a majority draw against Albert Morales back in September of last year. Perez was deducted a point due to hitting Morales at the end of the second round. Of course, Andre Sukumthaw came in to the UFC as the CES MMA bantamweight champion. He's coming off a split decision loss against Albert Morales in his UFC debut. Prior to that, he had won 3 fights in a row. What's your thoughts on this fight?
To me, Alejandro Perez is the pick here. Not one that you feel super enthusiastic about. I mean, a lot of these fights are pretty damn close on paper. To me, for Perez, it's just been a matter of seeing him look really good in the fight at times against Albert Morales, putting away Ian Entwistle fairly quickly. For Andre Sukumthaw, when he's fought the best competition on the regional scene, he has lost. So Alejandro Perez is my pick. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a TKO, because I think this could be pretty exciting as well. I wouldn't be surprised if these two trade hands. Who do you have?
I like Perez as well. I think this could be a little bit of a sneaky fight of the night pick. I think that they both could definitely exchange there on the feet. Be interesting to maybe see if Andre tries to use his wrestling in this matchup, but I'm going to go Alejandro Perez. Now, when it comes to the preliminary card, you know, I'm interested in Joseph Morales making his UFC debut, part of the Fight Pass prelims, taking on Roberto Sanchez. You know, Baronis and Hani Yahya is probably another one that I would label to as interested. I'm also interested in Hector Sandoval against Dustin Ortiz.
Yeah, I love how you, that Morales-Sanchez fight is the one I had circled. I'm excited about that flyweight matchup. I mean, you got a team alpha male prospect against a legacy fighting championship guy in Roberto Sanchez. Pretty good fight. I'm looking forward to seeing Jordan Rinaldi back. And then Brad Scott, Jack Hermanson is more of a fight quality. I'm looking forward to that as a fight. But fighters that I'm looking forward to, Dustin Ortiz is right up there. Hector Sandoval's solid at flyweight, but Ortiz has a pretty high talent level. The loss to Moreno was a great stock pusher for Moreno because of how good Ortiz is. And then Hani Yahya, a big-time veteran, a great grappler. I would expect him to get a pretty solid submission win over Briones.
Hector Sandoval is actually watching the interview he did with MMA Junkie where he was talking about why he was not on The Ultimate Fighter 24, about the fact that he had some high testosterone, and he talked about the issue with that, and definitely something that one jumps out to you. Now, in terms of, let's look at the underdogs on the preliminary card and tell me which underdog you think has the best shot to win. We got Brad Scott is +215 versus Jack Hermanson. Hector Sandvall +175 against Dustin Ortiz. Henry Brown is +190 against Hanayaya. Diego Rivas +215 against Jose Quinones. You have Joseph Morales +110 versus Roberto Sanchez, who's -130. And Herrera is +190 against Jordan Rinaldi. If you had to pick one underdog, who's your pick?
I would say I feel real good about Diego Rivas winning that fight. How about you?
He was definitely one that jumped out to me. I would go Joseph Morales at +110. I mean, he's a very slight underdog, but I'd probably go with him. I had to go with someone who is more than a 2-1 underdog, which don't have many options. I would look at Rivas. I couldn't go with Brad Scott. I Jack Hermanson in that fight. Hector Sandoval's kind of interesting at +175, but I think Ortiz is probably going to use his wrestling and work his way to a decision in that one. Probably Rivas, a guy that's over 2-1 2-1 underdog, would be the guy you would look at.
And then if you just expand your horizons back to the main card, you do have a +250/+260 guy in Humberto, I think the biggest. I believe he's the biggest dog on the card. So, yeah, it's pretty outrageous for any quality fighter to be that big of a dog against Martin Bravo, who may be really good, just hasn't necessarily consistently. I mean, he just hasn't had the chance to fight the best kind of guys to see if he deserves to be a -300. So, I really like those picks when you identify a fighter who may not be deserving to be that big of a favorite. Against a fellow UFC quality fighter, that's when you hedge the other way and you go with his opponent. And that, to me, is the thought process with picking Diego Rivas against Jose Quinones, is you don't feel confident about the idea of Quinones being -250.
Yeah, so it should be interesting night of fights coming up on Saturday night. Of course, we'll have a post-fight show, the only post-fight and pre-fight show of this month for the UFC. That is probably the craziest thing about this month, is the fact that we only have one UFC show. So, I don't know if I'll be watching all this fight card live or not. I'll probably watch probably some of the prelims probably live, but probably when it comes to the main card, probably majority of it I will watch on DVR. But definitely going to try to catch Moreno and Sergio Pettis live. That should be a good matchup there in the flyweight division. So, Daniel, that wraps up for another preview podcast, man.
Man, I'm emotional. I'm looking forward to our post-fight show, but by God, only one card in August? I can't function. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'll probably watch these fights live. So if you want to watch them.
You're going to watch a lot of Houston Texans preseason.
It's the peak of our year every year. Looking forward to it. It's I hope Tony Romo does some of our games. I'm looking forward to listening to him as a broadcaster. I think he'll be really good. And who knows? Maybe we can get him on one of the pre-fight shows.
Is he calling one of the Texans preseason games?
I'm not sure, but the Texans are on CBS, so
I don't know. Yeah, so they would have him calling that, yeah.
I tell you what, actually, I don't think so, because I think for the preseason games, isn't it the local broadcast get the TV deal?
Well, you have national TV games, but you do have a national game. We've been a part of that national game for a Fox. I remember a couple years ago, we had a national game. It was a home game. And we got stuck in a weather delay.
Jeez, that's awful.
Those are not fun as a broadcaster.
yeah, dude. Especially, I mean, when it comes to a broadcast, the dirty little secret is everyone wants to go home as soon as possible. because for the viewers, they get a turn off at, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. But the broadcasters, specifically the production people, they got to tear down all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, weather delays is the worst. And then I don't know if your equipment's inside or not, but when you got outside equipment and it's the weather, it's literally hell, I would assume.
I have done broadcasts outside, not in the NFL, but I've done various broadcasts, do it outside, and especially in Florida, you're always fearful of rain. But next Friday, my day – in terms of, I will leave for the stadium 5 hours before the game starts. So our game's at 7:30, so I'll leave our hotel at 2:30. I'll be at the stadium by 3, and it's a long day.
Yeah, man. I've been there.
But I love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's especially when you go and you do it, nothing goes wrong. You go home, you feel great about it.
Yes.
I mean, the thing about a job like that is it can either be the best or the worst. There's never really a middle ground because if you screw up, you know.
That's why when there's some technical problems that happen when you're watching UFC, I really don't want to be critical at all. Because I'm like, no. That could be me in a couple weeks.
Oh, no. Yeah, you don't. I mean, once you work in the production, it makes you never want to criticize anything about anything ever again. Because everybody's trying their best. You know, there was a graphic on a Texas Rangers broadcast 2 days ago that had like the top five non-American home run hitters of all time or something like that.
And it was American on there?
No, it was like bad. It was like they had Barry Bonds, and up top it was a picture of Ichiro Suzuki. And it was the same deal for every player other than Rafael Palmeiro in the middle, but they had the AT&T logo over the Palmeiro. Like, it was one of the all-time tragic graphics I've ever seen. They just had different names for different faces. It was obviously some type of preview graphic they accidentally ran on the broadcast. And having done graphics before, I empathize with those people because it's just like basically for those jobs, you must do 100% the entire 3-hour game, which is just an incredible demand for anybody at any task. You must not screw up once. You hit the wrong keystroke and everybody notices, unless they don't, which is also possible.
By the way, Daniel, a little breaking news here as we're doing this live here on Friday morning.
Uh-huh.
Someone has missed weight.
Let me guess. I'm not looking, I swear to you. Someone has missed weight. There's no way I'm going to get this right, but I'm going to assume.
I'm going to give you a hint first off.
Okay.
The fighter missed weight by 4 pounds. Actually, 3 pounds.
That's the hint?
The hint is 3 pounds. They missed weight, giving the 1 pound allowance.
Okay. I will go with Rashad Evans.
Wrong. Alexa Grasso.
Oh, man.
She weighed in 119 pounds. That's the biggest fear we have when we do these pre-fight shows. It's like we're going to stop recording and boom, there comes a fire, Mrs. Wade. And MA Junkie just tweeted about 10 minutes ago that Lex Grosso, 119 pounds.
Damn, that's bad. I understand it's really hard to weigh 115 pounds. Like the last time I was that light, I was 4. Damn, that sucks for her. There really aren't too many female fighters that have that reputation as a Mr. Waiter, but hopefully that changes, you know, for equality.
It makes you wonder, you know, with the UFC bringing in 125 pounds, if that's something she wants, or maybe it's just, you know,
she's from Mexico.
Yeah. You never know what's going on. You know, did they get sick during fight week and they just couldn't, you know, sweat out those pounds? I mean, it's one of those things you never know. I mean, that's why picking fights can be tough because you just never know, you know, what's a fighter going to feel like on fight day? Are they going to come down with some illness or whatnot? So right now she's the only fighter to miss weight as we're recording this podcast. So, you know, I would imagine that fight will still go forward. I would imagine that, you know, Ronda would still take the fight and take 20% of Alexa Grasso's purse. But, you know, it happens more times than not that a fighter misses weight.
Yeah, man, and that's a surprising one. Maybe at 125 is where it's at for her. When it comes to missing weight, to me, it's all about consistency of the weight missing. You miss it once, it's understandable because that's an incredibly tough task with so many variables. But once you become a fighter who misses it 2 consecutive fights in a row or 3 times out of 4, then it's absolutely necessary for you to fight in a different weight class. So for Alexa, that is certainly something to keep an eye on moving forward, and we shall see how that impacts her performance.
So UFC Fight Night is on Saturday night from Mexico City, the main card on FS1 starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Prelims on FS1 starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and the preliminary card on UFC Fight Pass will start at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, me and Dan will be back to recap this fight card once that fight card is over. Of course, you can check that out on Sunday on RadioInfluence.com. Be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at DanielCalvonDGG. Give myself a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd.
Hi, this is David Penzer, former TNA and WCW ring announcer, inviting you to join me on my podcast, Sitting Ringside, We're going to talk to the stars of professional wrestling today and yesteryear. Also, talk to those behind the scenes that have some awesome stories to tell. You're not going to want to miss it. City Ringside with me, David Penzer, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.